You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Ah, you can hear the noises of Leon coming into the studio. He's made it just in time here for The Dice Men Cometh. On Edge Radio 99.3 FM, it's Thursday the 6th of September, and we're in the studio for episode number 228.
Yes, we are. Mark. Sorry, I'm not listening.
Garth, you look like you're reading a magazine there, is that right?
I am actually reading a magazine, but not just any old magazine. Arguably the most important magazine and magazine cover in the history of personkind.
Why is that, Garth? Tell us a bit more.
Well, the magazine in question is The Campaigner magazine.
Oh, fine Australian tabletop game, role-playing, miniatures, war games, yes.
Exactly, you know, edited by the wonderful Matt Lee.
Oh, and we are subscribers to that magazine,
aren't we? Which is why I'm reading it. It arrived on my doorstep to my door today, Leon.
Huh?
Yes. But what makes this magazine so exciting for yours truly is that yours truly is on the cover of this magazine.
What?
Devouring a burger full of Burger Up cards talking about Burger Up. So there you go. Have you guys been on a cover of a magazine?
Yes.
Yes, a previous edition of the Campaigner magazine, but not by yourself.
No, we weren't on the cover. We had a picture inside the magazine.
That's right. That's right, actually.
A feature article about us, but not the cover.
So anyway, that was pretty exciting. I've never been on the cover of a magazine by myself before. So if you're interested, jump onto the Campaigner magazine website. And as of the 9th of September, you'll be able to download a copy or go on and subscribe and get future copies sent to your door like I did. But anyway, more importantly, what are we talking about this week?
Well, I think you two are going to tell us about some games that we have all been playing. Is that right?
Yeah, we are.
We've got a couple of feature games tonight.
Well, we've got the first one that we're going to lead off on, which is currently on Kickstarter. It's also very much an Australian game, even though on Kickstarter it says it's by Good Games Publishing in the USA.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Leon, you're going to talk about some Vikings doing Viking-y thing involving pillaging and rolling dice.
I will attempt to if I'm still conscious by the time it gets randomised.
That's wonderful. I love your enthusiasm. And Mark,
yes,
you have taken your turn on the toilet playing some iOS / Android games.
Is that right? And I'm going to give you a little bit of an update about what I've been up to and what you might like to get up to. If you need a bit of electronic amusement in toilet breaks or while you're waiting for your next board game to start.
That sounds all very, very good. But before we move on to that song you're dying to play, Mark, we better say thanks to Area 52.
Thank you.
Friendly local game store. Go in there, buy all the things, including Leon's comical books, Mark's Funko Pops, and my board games. That sounds perfect to me. So, Mark, push the button. We are the Dice Men Cometh. It is Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and we'll be back after this song.
That was Dan Kelly with Check Out Cutie on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with this week, your Dice Men. Oh, God, the flu.
Leon's broken again.
Oh, my God, I'm in physical and sick pain. Anyway, so I balls that up.
You did.
And I said the word balls. Correct. Don't think that's swearing. I'll edit that out.
Thanks, Area 52.
They're the ones.
For letting Leon get his balls out on the show tonight.
Do they have limb sips? I could use a limb sip.
They have Duff beer, though.
Oh, I did see that.
Which is not actually beer. It's an energy drink in the Duff beer can.
Yeah.
So probably not as good for you as a beer would be. Because there's some natural things
yes,
in beer.
Yes, but Leon, the kids have got to have something to drink.
That's very, very true.
Can we get back to talking about what we know?
What do we know?
What do we know, Garth?
I can do the alphabet backwards.
Oh, no, not that again.
We know that.
That's why you're on the cover of magazines.
So,
yes,
let's talk about a game that we have played lately and we have played a while back.
Mm.
But more importantly, we played it lately, not specifically enough, Tuesday, 2 days ago, where we were very lucky to be able to crack open a review / preview copy of Guildmaster by the Australian designer Chris Anthony. published by Good Games Publishing, which has a very large Australian connection with Kim Brayback, good friend of the show and obviously amazing games publisher par excellence.
Mm-hmm.
They just had a big hit with the expansion to Unfair, and obviously Unfair before that.
Correct.
They've got a big coming, and if people remember back to my big LFG Sydney interview piece, I did have a chat with Kim on that where he filled us in about Unfair, which was just about to, the expansion was just about to hit Kickstarter. This game, Guildmaster, which is live on Kickstarter now, and then a couple other projects that are coming up, and he has been very good to us to get us this at short notice and let us get to the table so I don't forget it. Thank you so much, Kim, and Good Games Publishing for that.
Correct. So this game, we first were able to experience, I believe, at PAX 2 years ago, is that right?
Yes.
Where we sat down with Chris and were able to play, I think, Leon, you played it twice, is that right?
I believe so.
Yeah, I only played maybe 3 rounds of this game. But anyway, before we get to that, let's talk about it. So Guildmaster is a game where each player is playing the master of an adventurer's guild.
What a name.
I know. Where each player is competing, because the guilds are competing, in a fantasy world, to be the guild that has the most fame, i.e., victory points.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really cool theme, and for anyone who's got into role-playing, has spent a lot of the time being the adventurers, doing the exciting things, but not being on the side of organising
management
and making your guild the most amazing guild in the world.
That's kind of how the game Role Player, everyone went, oh, someone's made a board game out of actually creating a character that goes into these games. This is one step further when someone said, well, you've created your character. What if you've created enough for a team? Here's how you manage your team.
That is 100% right. So this game is played out over 9 rounds. The good thing about these 9 rounds, though, is that the vast majority of it is all done secretly and simultaneously by the players. So straight off the belt, this game, according to its BGG listing, says it takes 60 to 120 minutes. It plays 2 to 4. Very happy to say that it will play within that time frame, because even the notoriously slow dice men were able to play a game of which at least one of us at the table, Aiden, had never seen this game before, so it was a learning game and a teaching experience.
And really, the fact that we had played it almost two years ago, I mean, we were pretty rusty as far as that goes.
We were done and dusted within that two-hour mark. And that's a fantastic credit to this game, because I'm sure you can agree with me, Leon, that most of the time when we see that number on the box, we have to times it by some other numbers.
Well, it is definitely in that sweet spot, because I didn't play with you guys on Tuesday because I was suffering from the plague then, as I am now.
You were suffering.
Suffering. Would you give me a bit of slack? Anyway, so I've only played this 2 years ago, but if you put this on the table in front of me right now, I'd have a fair crack at being able to explain to you how this game works and how it plays, because it was not that difficult at the time, and it's one of those games that after one round, you're just like, yep, got it.
That's right.
And then from there, no trouble whatsoever. Yep.
Okay, good segue, Leon. So what do you do? Well, each player is going to start with a basic hand of 4 novice adventurers, and that's all they are. But each of the adventurers has some stats, which are essentially the skills in 6 different aspects. What you're going to be trying to do is use those skills during the course of the game to win contracts, which will get you more fame and more money. But that's the long-term process. Where you're going to start is you've got to start small. You might have to build up your guild and be able to increase the number of adventurers that you can have, or the number of adventurers you can send out on any given mission. Or you might need your guild to just get more money every round, because you need to spend that money to do stuff during the course of the game. But building up and making your guild as big and as bright as it can be is incredibly important. That will be one of the actions that you can do. The next thing that you can do is actually recruit those adventurers, which will immediately be better than your novice band of novices. You're going to start with the adepts, which are slightly more powerful, meaning they will have slightly more skill in the various numbers that you're trying to get. You will then go up to the heroes and the legends and all the super powerful ones that you basically will be able to recruit as the game goes on. And then the third thing that you're going to be able to do is attempt to complete contracts. Now, there is always going to be five or six of those contracts out on the board at any given time. The contracts we'll explain a little bit in a later, but they're going to involve assigning adventurers, doing some dice rolling, and succeeding or failing on those rolls.
Garth, is it an adept or is it an adept?
Yes.
I don't know. I'm asking a question.
It's an adept.
Is it?
No, I don't know.
Well, you said it very adeptly.
There you go. Not earnestly. So let's go into this a little bit more. There are three possible things you can do on the board, and you're going to start with only being able to do two of these things, because every player is going to have their own little player screen, and behind that player screen is essentially a little grid where you've got order 1, 2, 3, and 4, where you will start by only being able to do two orders. You'll be able to upgrade that to be able to do three, and you may even be able to do four orders depending on how your upgrades go. And the orders are where you're going to assign a number of adventurers to do a certain number of things in a certain order. So once everyone has actually done that, the orders might be order one, I want to build and upgrade some of my guilds. And order two might be, I'm going to try and hire this new adventurer that's appeared on the board. Or I might try and hire an adventurer or go and do a contract. Or I might even try and do two different contracts in my two order spots if I've got decent enough adventurers that match the skills in the contracts I'm going to be trying to do. Arguably the easiest one to explain is the building, because on the board there is a very clearly understood building track where once everyone has revealed their orders, whoever has committed the most money will get to start doing some building. But if there's ever a draw, they're going to have to fight it out. And this is where the adventurers you've assigned becomes important, because you will look at the skills in one of the six particular categories for your adventurers, and you roll some dice, compare it against the particular skill that your opponent has done. Whoever rolls the most, they get to go first. That's important because building becomes increasingly more expensive the more you build. And part of the building is upgrading that guild to get more stables. Now, that thematically means that you can send out more of your adventurers and go from doing two orders to three orders per round, which is great.
Yes.
Or you might want to upgrade your mess hall, which means that then instead of just being able to send two adventurers out per order, you can send three or perhaps even four adventurers if you upgrade it all the way to the level three. And the final upgrade you can do, which is the big upgrade, is the bar. The bar is really simply everyone's going to get two income per round. You upgrade your bar once, you'll get four income. If you can upgrade it a second, you'll get seven income more every single round. But the challenge of this is, there's only one maximum upgrade in each of those categories in the game.
So you've got you start with a level one, you can upgrade to a level two or a level three, but there's only one of each of the level threes. And if, Garth, you get the situation where some bastard happens to get the level three upgrade of all three of those...
I'm listening.
It's probably going to be hard to stop that person from winning.
Did you let him do that, you idiot?
Yeah.
So Leon hasn't played the game for nearly 2 years and he knows that was stupid.
Yeah.
That you let me do.
Yeah.
So yes, I was able to get level three upgrades in everything.
Cash flow issue.
Yes, I did win the game by, let's say, 40 points.
Are you gloating again, Garth?
No, I'm just telling it how it is. So there are your large upgrades. You want to get those upgrades happening relatively quickly because money starts off tight. Everyone only gets $7. You want to earn income as quickly as you can. You've got other upgrades, which are dice manipulation ones. These are your smaller upgrades. And essentially, you can have up to four of those in your guild, four of the six available sort of skill checks. And they are little double-sided tokens, which will either allow you, if you're rolling for that skill, to change one die to a six, or to have two re-rolls of that particular die. So if I'm rolling the red, which is the hammers, the big fighty ones, and I roll two ones, I could do two re-rolls, or you can re-roll the same dice twice. You can upgrade those, and they are incredibly powerful. You will see why in a minute.
Yeah, you use those almost every turn.
Indeed. So the building, you'll want to do your upgrades. There are also prestige upgrades, of which you can only buy one during the game, and they will be end-of-game scoring.
Yeah.
So they will either, you want to buy them early to try and give yourself a bit of a direction of what you want to do, But more than likely, you're going to be buying those probably in the last third of the game where you've already got stuff established and it becomes a bit of a race as to who gets the one first that is most relevant. I was able to get the Architect Skilled one, Leon, which will make you very happy because it basically not only gave me some points for my upgrades, it really gave me a huge amount of points, and I got 18 points from that one thing alone, which was enormous. So building is great. The way it'll work is, as I say, the person who wins the build order will go first. They'll be able to build basically as many times as they need to in order to build large and small upgrades. Each of those have a sort of a cross hammer of symbols, symbol of hammers that tell you how many you need. Then the next player will be able to, but the building has become more expensive then because they might start at 2 coins per build, then it goes 3, then 4, and up to 5 and more and more. So it becomes increasingly expensive. You then go to the adventuring purchasing side of it where you're trying to buy your adventurers. They will initially only have 2 adventurers open to you in a 3-player game.
Yeah, so you're recruiting new adventurers.
Your adepts. Yeah. You then need to have hired one of those already to be able to then go up and buy the next stage of hero and up to the legendary version. So there's a bit of you need to do a bit of planning in order to get that. It's really quite simple. You will assign an adventuring team and a letter to say, this is the one I'm going to try and hire. If 2 people are trying to recruit the same one, you have a dice off, and whoever wins it is going to... Oh, sorry, whoever bids the most is going to get that adventure because whatever you assign, that's what you're spending. They have minimum bids, but no maximums.
Yeah, that's right. They've got the minimum price, but you've got to think about, is someone else likely to go to that one? I've been getting all these guys with the lyre symbol, music bard, something like that, and if someone else happens to be going for those same symbols... then you're probably going to have to pay more than the value.
Yeah, but you'll do that and you'll slowly accrue a larger and larger hand of adventurers. There is no hand limit in this game.
Mm.
You can go crazy, but it's tricky because money can be really, really tight.
Cash money.
So you want to get that. And then the third thing you're going to be doing is contracts. Now, there are always, as I say, 5 to 6 contracts out. Each contract will have 1 or 2 of the different skill checks that you'll be trying to roll against. So a card might say you need to roll at least 6 in the lyre version, the lyre picture, the little harp symbol.
Yeah, or the axe, or the stealth symbol, the sneaky
spirit
mask.
Yep. And essentially you'll assign a couple of adventurers that have those skill checks that match the contract that you're trying to achieve. You will roll for them. If you equal or exceed the number of the contracts, you will earn it, which will earn you fame, which is victory points, and earn you money, which is incredibly important. It does become interesting again, though, and I think this may have changed since you played it, Leon, where if 2 adventurers go for the same contract, they are faced with a quandary.
The prisoner's dilemma, they call that.
They do, because they then have to try and negotiate. And it is compulsory that you negotiate, and once it's negotiated, of which you can negotiate the victory points, the money, who actually gets the bonuses on the card, which might be an instant bonus or an ongoing one or a boon, which, you know, means a couple of different things. You negotiate all of those things, and then every player has a little token with a red side and a green side. You reveal those simultaneously. If it's both green, then you agree and your negotiation is binding. But if one player actually says, nah, screw you, and reveals the red face, then there is no binding arrangement. The contract is then going to be fought over individually. The person who screwed over the other person and said, nah, I don't want to go in this with you, gets their first crack at it. They don't succeed, or maybe they do, but if they don't, it then goes on to the player who is trying to do the good thing.
And they have a penalty.
They have their penalty, which is the contract number plus the number of dice they're rolling. Yeah. So if a contract is 6 and they're rolling 4 dice, it becomes a challenge of 10
or higher.
Yeah,
so there's a bit of a disincentive to go for it yourself, but at the same time, getting all the money, all the victory point, all the bonuses... Let's just say we didn't see a lot of cooperating in our game.
No. And that's really the decisions that you'll be making. Now, the other thing that makes this game a little bit more interesting is that a lot of the adventurers' cards have symbols down the bottom. Yep. And the symbols might be a full moon or a half moon or a sun or a blood moon. And the reason that's important is because over the 9 rounds, the round marker flips from being on its half moon side to its full moon side. And every 3 rounds, 3, 6, and 9, there is a blood moon.
A blood moon.
what'll happen is whenever that round is triggered and it matches the symbol on your adventurer's cards, that effect triggers. So you might have a card like I did, which is the Thief, which is on, I think, a half moon or a full moon, can't remember, one of those. I just get a coin from each of my opponents, which is brilliant. On a blood moon, those powers are really, really powerful, but you'll usually only find them on the higher level adventurers. So you've had to recruit some of those along the way.
And some of them even have a sun symbol, which is like every turn.
It applies all the time.
And it happens in a particular phase. There's a few different ones. So not only do those adventurers have all those skills, they do have those special abilities.
Correct.
Which makes them cool.
So there is a lot going on in this game when you just listen to an explanation.
Yeah.
But the game itself plays really quick, and the joy of it all happening simultaneously, it does just move at a clip.
But Garth, hang on, just wait. It sounds like you said that if I go for a contract or I go for an adventure and I miss out, my guys are just standing there with their appendages in the wind doing nothing.
You would think so, but that's where you should stop waving your appendages in the wind and just go for a little bit of a wander.
Ah.
And that's important because, yeah, you might lose your contract or you might not be able to recruit that adventurer because someone else got the adventurer and bid some more. So wandering gives you two options. You can either just roll your skill dice and for every number, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 and so on, you'll get some money and some fame.
Yeah.
Or each player has, at the start of the game, one private contract, which is your own secret contract that you can just fulfill whenever you have the opportunity to wander. You can choose to wander as an action as well, but that might simply be another contract that's just some fame, just a bit of money, might be an effect that's going to apply to you. So there's never going to be a situation where you can do nothing.
Yeah, and that was, surprisingly, that was quite handy because particularly, of course, as I usually do, I took the action to get more actions, which in this case was the stable, I think it was, to let me put out three orders instead of two.
Mm-hmm.
But because I only had my original team of four adventurers, I sort of didn't quite have enough adventurers to do three orders.
That's true.
But I did have another adventurer that got a bonus for completing a contract by himself. So he went off to do a contract, which meant I had one little person that wasn't very useful left over. They then could go wandering and either have a crack at the private contract or
just get
a little bit of extra money, which, trust me, a little bit of extra money is always good. And you do get, I think at the end of every Blood Moon round, which is like every three, you get another private contract. So those
don't run out. Yeah, the board kind of resets. All the adventurers that are for hire disappear. All the available contracts that are face up, sod off. So the board has a bit of a reset, which is cool. So they're the mechanics of the game. What do we think about it? There is a lot going on in the game. It is complicated to explain, but it is very simple to play. I really liked it.
Well, it was 2 years ago since I played it, and it was, I think, my game of PAX 2 years ago.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So I think they've tuned it up quite a bit since then.
Absolutely.
And things have changed. And even the components back then looked pretty good, so I imagine now. I was actually looking forward to trying to be the first backer of this when it came up on Kickstarter, but silly me thought it would be more fun to hurt myself and go home instead of being up at 4 a.m, which I was going to be when it went live. But, yeah, it's on Kickstarter at the moment, and, you know, it's coming, so that's good.
It's funded. Yeah.
It's funded, so which is a good thing. And, I'm looking forward to getting my hands on a copy.
Well, for me, you sort of, when you think about this theme, you think about, or the game that comes to mind for me is, you know, that D&D game with the cubes.
Dungeons and Dragons.
No.
Role player.
Board game. Oh, my God.
Waterdeep.
Yes, Lords of Waterdeep. Sorry, people.
Right.
So you think about Lords of Waterdeep, because that is about technically recruiting adventurers. Let's call them cubes in that case.
Mm-hmm.
You then are sending out those cubes to do missions, which are cards, where you've got to have a minimum number of cubes, and there your adventurer cubes are giving you points. It's a little bit similar, but in this case, your adventurers are people with names and skills and fun abilities.
Mm.
All the great art,
Mark.
Yeah. Oh,
you should mention that.
I haven't had a chance to mention the fantastic art in this game yet. I really do love the character art, and it's really fun to see people like Chris Anthony, the designer, and Kim Braybark, and even Joel Finch, the designer of Unfair.
Mm-hmm.
They're all secretly featured in adventurer art in this game, which is really clever.
Yep.
Lost my train of thought now. So in this game, your adventurers have a name, have skills, have abilities. They're going out to do jobs. The jobs all have little themes. Now, it really might just be about do this contract, which you have to roll a 20. They're all a little bit thematic. The bonuses are a little bit thematic. But for me, if I've got to pick between Lords of Waterdeep and this, I'll pick this every time, just because the characters inhabit the game. You're not running around gathering cubes to fulfill cubes in a quest.
No.
So that's one point for me. Did I mention the art?
No.
I love the art. I don't know of any other game that is like this with the orders. Now, of course, there's program movement games where you're programming your movement or something else, but I don't know if you guys can think of any. I can't think of anywhere you're sort of giving orders like this in secret and then you all reveal and then they're all resolved simultaneously. Normally you do it in player order.
Kind of like the battle system from Cry Havoc or Rising Sun.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Where you build on the I want to do this specific thing before somebody else or I want to do this and they won't kind of thing. But that's, you know, few and far between.
Quite,
that's just the battle system.
It's also quite different, yeah, battle system. So, look, it looks great. It's fun to play. It plays in a great amount of time. It has a theme that's not too over the top, but it allows you to get into it. Particularly, look, if you're into your fantasy theme, it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy in terms of it's easy to play. In my experience, unfortunately.
Oh, did he have a inish experience again?
No.
Because he likes this game.
No. Just in terms of my strategy,
Let me ask you then, yes. Because, look, I did win and I did win by a fair bit, but then second and third, you could throw a handkerchief over the scores. There was only a couple of points in it. Having now reflected on this for a couple of days and wallowing in self-pity, what would you have done differently?
Well, look, clearly I've already mentioned the huge mistake that both Aiden and I made, which was to let you get all three of the level three upgrades.
Yes.
Which then gave you an advantage in orders, an advantage in size of packs being able to send out, and an advantage in income every round. Income is really important in this game, or money is really important, because you need money to build and you need money to recruit.
Yes.
Two of the three things you're able to do. Yes, you can wander and get a little bit of money, but you're often only getting one, two, or three coins from that. So firstly, absolutely you need to upgrade the bar. I should have done that much quicker. And, of course, as I said, I made the mistake. I upgraded the stable so I could get an extra order, but I didn't really have the adventurers to be able to take advantage of that. So then the next thing I did was I went, oh, well, I better get some more adventurers. Still didn't do the bar. That was my second mistake.
Yeah, so just on that, because I basically messaged Kim straight after we'd finished playing to give him some feedback and ask a few questions, and he said that in the vast majority of people who play this game, they follow the same strategy as you. They go for the more orders or they go for the more income straight away because they're the most easily identifiable and immediately, I guess they're the most selfish options because they are benefiting you straight away.
Yes.
Whereas for I went and upgraded the mess hall straight away, which allowed me to then send out three adventurers on every given time instead of two. What my thoughts were was that would mean in any contested section of the game, whether or not we were contesting who was going to build first or who was going to do a contract, I would have the ability to roll more dice. So, yes, I wouldn't be able to do so many different orders, but the orders I did have, chances are I'd win those.
I don't think I thought I'd ever say this, Garth, but that was a well-thought-out strategy.
Thank you. Thank you. This is recorded, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And someday someone might listen.
Yeah, what else?
And I think the other thing was the adventurers, because you need to have an adept to be able to recruit a hero, and then you need to have a hero to be able to recruit a legendary hero. I found myself at some stage thinking, okay, now I need more adventurers, but I've only got one adept. But then that adept had higher skills, so then I wanted to send them on the contract. So it's that vicious circle of that guy has to go and recruit because he's the only guy who can get the other one, the higher ones, but then that takes them away from the contract.
Yeah, they're spending my money on adventurers, whereas they're not able to go and do a contract, which will earn me money, because contracts you might only earn from $2 to $8 or $9, so that can be your real big cash cow.
And
I'm
up to three or four.
Three.
The fourth thing, I think, is, well, I could just say playing with Aiden, because he totally screwed me over. But the reason, because of, the reason for that was, and I only noticed it sort of halfway through the game, is we had adventurers that had one of our skills being similar, the one with the lyre, the harp, and that meant all of a sudden we were competing for the same contract every round.
Yes. But part of the reason that I got such a dominant victory, I guess, is that I wasn't competing. I was going for contracts that Mark and Aiden were not going for, so I could put them lower down the order track because I'd gone from upgrading my my mess hall to my stable, so I was now able to do three orders, and then because I got the final upgrade, I was able to do a four. But I was confident that I would be able to do the higher level contracts, of which there are three different categories of them, common, and then the other two that the name escaped me at the moment, without having to fight over it, whereas I knew that Mark and Aiden were going to fight over it, which was great. Now, the way the game and the rules compensate for that is this working together arrangement, because if two players arrange to agree on a contract, both of those players get the maximum fame on the contract. They don't split it. They're getting the maximum fame, and that could have been a strategy for you and Aiden to employ.
Yes, it could have.
Is that if you'd actually said, wow, Garth's had a couple of really big successes on these, the fighting skill, the big red hammer, if we just put our big fighty guys together, we might have a team that'll allow us to stop Garth getting that. And that was a big part of the game that meant I was able to win, is that I wasn't scared of not being able to get the contracts that I was confident.
But that's also, you played with three people. Most games, when you play with three people, kind of, if you have a conflict with another person for like two rounds out of the nine, that other person, they've just had two free rounds of, whey!
Multiply that by three.
Yes.
And where that other person had nine rounds of being mostly uncontested.
And this is, again, because I explained that to Kim and he said, look, that is completely common.
Yeah, yeah.
And you will find that, because I asked him, I said, look, do you normally find there's more interaction when it's maximum player count, there's a bit more fighting? And he goes, no, it's always after people have played at least once or twice.
Yeah.
And they sort of actually realise the power of being able to negotiate and talk. Now, you can talk and say, let's go for these two things and work together on this particular contract. You reveal your boards, and you haven't done that at all. You've completely lied through your teeth, which might screw them over. But there's also a great way to stop it being a runaway leader.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it wasn't your fault that you won, Garth. You know, we pretty much gave it to you on a silver platter. But, I could have done a lot of things differently. I should have probably thought about it a bit more. And it's not, as I said, it's not that it's a difficult game. There is a bit of strategy there, and I like that, because you do have to think about it a little bit. You do have to plan maybe more than one turn at a time, or at least be thinking about which direction am I going to go next.
Well, we better wrap this up because the Kickstarter is still live. It has funded. Leon is a backer. There are almost 1,200 other backers. This game's $49 with free shipping to very large parts of the world, so it's
and
a bargain.
Another bit of our Dice Men bingo. I'll talk about the price. It's very well priced too.
It is.
Which for a game on Kickstarter is a rarity these days.
Correct. So that was Guildmaster. We are the Dice Men Cometh. It's Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Here's your song. I'm in the fumble. Well, that was Blondie with Hanging on the Telephone.
Woo!
Leon, congratulations on making it back in after an explosive nose blow.
It was very successful. I can actually sound kind of clear-ish, kind of.
That's wonderful. Well,
I hope you haven't made me sick, Leon. I had experienced a coughing attack halfway through that break.
If so, it's the most impressive illness I've ever seen, because I was in the studio about 2 minutes before that started kicking in.
All right, well, I've said enough this show, so Mark, over to you. What are you going to talk about?
Yeah, look, I'm going to talk about, you know, a little bit of activity that I've been getting up to outside games, but still involving games.
Uh-huh.
Very clean.
On the toilet.
No, not always. Look, I've been catching the bus a bit to work these days because I've started a new job. And it's sort of more central, and it works out good to get the bus. The times are a bit more regular for me. And so I've been passing a bit of time on the bus now. I like to listen to a bit of music. I like to listen to podcasts on the bus. But I also like to play a few games. And what better way to play more board games in your life than to play them on the bus on your phone.
Isn't there nothing worse than an app of a game or any app in general that stops the music or the podcast you're listening to when it kicks on? Ooh, I hate that.
It's very common, though.
I know, but it's so annoying.
I had to go in and jiggle the settings to get it not to do that.
Yeah.
But this is, I don't know if it's the first time, but one of the few times where an app of a game that I knew nothing about has made me want to go and buy the physical game. The game I'm talking about is a little, it's just a two-player game, been around quite a long time, called Jaipur.
Ooh, is this camel farming?
Not quite, but there are camels involved. So you are a merchant in India, and basically you are selling different types of resources.
That's basically
precious resources. Yeah. It's, one of them is tea and leather, and not camels, but camels are involved. I'm trying to just cancel out of this this thing, this game.
Welcome to Old Man Plays with Phone. So let's commentate on this. He's turned it the other way around.
The reason why I was trying to bring it up is because I was trying to bring up the name of the designer, because it escapes me, because it's not anyone that I had come across before, and that name is...
It's almost like we're stalling for time.
No, BGG Garth. Bring up the BGG page. Anyway, the art on this... So part of the reason that this app is so lovely is the art. So the art on this is not the art you get in the game. The art on the app has been done by a good friend of ours. We love his work, Vincent Dutray.
Oh, excellent.
So it's a beautiful, beautiful implementation, and you've got lots of people in turbans and camels and lots of exotic-looking trade goods.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very lovely. And, of course, in the app, you can have all the little bit of animation and things like that to sort of spice it up a bit. Ha! Because it's got spices. So the game is by Sebastian Porchon. Now, Garth, if you click on his name, so one of the functionality of BGG is at least other games he's designed, but I don't know.
Wow, a link to other things
he has designed.
This site is amazing. Jamaica.
And Isfahan. Metropolis.
An unlock game.
And there you go.
Corso.
So his name didn't ring a bell to me, but this app, as I said, I then went into Area 52 and checked out the physical version of this game.
And did you buy it from Area 52?
I'm going to. I just haven't got around to it yet.
Okay.
I've picked this game up several times over the years because I've been told good things. Just I've never got around to pulling the trigger and actually buying it.
Well, that was the thing that made me play the app is on so many lists I had heard, you know, top two-player games, this was right up there. But when you look at the box and when you look at the bits, it just...
It looks very old-fashioned. It looks very 10 years ago in the hobby, which you've got to assume, I'm assuming there's a game out now that probably does this mechanics better than what this
does.
Well,
it was from 2009, so not surprising it looks like it was 10 years ago.
Well, I tell you what, there is a really, really good tutorial / playthrough video done by Watch It Played. In fact, done by the son and daughter of Rodney Smith.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives you an idea of the complexity level of this game. It's quite easy to learn. A lot of strategy, but it's quite easy to learn. But so the app itself has a lovely tutorial. You can play against the AI. You can play pass and play. You can play on a local network or play over the internet against someone else. It's a game by, I think it's Asmodee. It uses your Asmodee account.
Yep.
And look, they are just knocking it out of the park with the digital implementations. And then it has the campaign mode where you basically unlock different parts on the map of India as you move your way trading across the country, and you sort of have to build up your resources to be able to unlock the new areas. So, I mean, that's just really playing multiple rounds of the game, but it just creates a little bit more interest. I've played this solo heaps.
Yep.
I've played it with my partner heaps, and now she started playing it solo. We've had so much fun with it.
So is it worth the $6 that they're trying to get it on the App Store?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I mean, I've had qualms about some of the apps that I've paid money for. I'd say this is absolutely worth it. The other one for me where I'm, you know, didn't even think about it for a second was Twilight Struggle.
Sure.
Obviously, that's a much different game. But both of those, the apps do it really well. They look amazing. They're true to the game without having the sort of simple cardboard look. And as I said, in this one, they've even upgraded the art for the digital version. I'd love to see this art applied into the physical version. So I just wanted to mention that one. That's really all I've been playing. I said that and Twilight Struggle and that stupid golf game.
Oh, God.
Which is not a board game. No. I've got to stop playing it. And Paperback. That's the other one. I have been playing Paperback, the Tim Fowers game.
That's a great app. I play that. That is my go-to app for when I'm sitting in the pub or waiting for someone to turn up, because it's brilliant as a little solo exercise. You're basically playing Scrabble with yourself, but in a much more enjoyable way.
Yeah. Have they released Hardback in an app yet?
No, I'd really like that because
Well, considering Hardback is pretty much, or for me at the very least, replaced Paperback as a game. Because Paperback I played and went, even for someone who's not very good at spelling, this isn't bad. And then I played Hardback and went, oh, this is 10 times
I thought they did. Yeah, no, they have. So Hardback's $8. So yeah, no, that came out a few months ago.
There you go.
I think I haven't pulled the pin on Hardback because I've already paid for Paperback as the app, even though I prefer Hardback and I've got the physical game of Hardback.
Mm-hmm.
The other one, and I know I've mentioned a few times, Onirim. That's the other one I'd often play because it's so quick when I've got a couple of minutes to kill. Whereas Jaipur is not, you know, it's not your 30-second or one-minute game. It's probably like 10 or 15 minutes, but which for me is perfect time.
Yeah, well, I've been playing a few different ones lately. I have been playing Roll for It, a little dice game. There's always going to be three different cards out that have some combination of the dice pips that you need to achieve. You're rolling dice, assigning to the things. Once you have the number of dice and the number of pips on there, then you get the points, first to 40 or whatever it is. That's a really quick game, and it was. I think I picked it up while it was free, so that's really cool. I've also been playing a little bit of Hostage Negotiator. Which is, you know, it's a solo game, and I tried it on Tabletopia months and months and months ago, just when I was first getting my head around Tabletopia, and it's a great solo game. And again, the app is excellent because it guides you through with the tutorial. It doesn't allow you to make false moves. You can certainly make bad ones, but that's your own choice. And thematically, it's really interesting. You are a hostage negotiator trying to rescue people who are hostages and trying to talk down this hostage negotiator or do what you need to allow them to not be around anymore.
How do you do that in a game context? I'm really curious. Is it scripted conversations where you pick
your
cards, A, B, C, or D?
Yeah, your cards are your scripts. So basically you are using the cards. They have a couple of, let's say, currencies on them.
Yep.
One of them is to be able to purchase more cards. The other one is to basically affect this hostage meter that goes up and down, and depending on how tense the person who's holding the hostage is, that'll affect the number of dice that you can roll, which makes you more or less powerful.
Okay.
It's a really interesting little game, actually. And the last one my kids and I have been playing a lot is Uno.
An oldie, but
it's still a good game.
It's still a good game. It's still fun. And I love the fact that I don't have to shuffle all the cards all the time. The kids love it because it can be played quickly. It looks great. It's that online thing where you just automatically get matched up with other people who have similar rank than you.
Cool.
It's free. You don't communicate with anyone apart from giving them a little emoji here or there. And it's just a bit of stupid fun. You know, who knows? It's not bad.
Well, it's one of the top in our hobby of, like, when people say, oh, you do a board game show, Monopoly. Most of the game people mention after we say that, we go, no, that game's rubbish. Don't play that ever. Uno's actually one of those ones I go, yeah, it's a decent game.
It is.
And there's not that many of them when that conversation gets brought up.
That's right. So anyway, that was our electronic conversation. Hey, Mark?
Yes, I have nothing further to say except I'm just not getting any better at guns, shot and clever, so I've stopped playing that game.
You should try Friday then, again.
I just can't get past about 210, and apparently people can score in the 300s in that game, so I refuse to play it anymore.
Well, there we go. All right, that's very good. Where the Dice Men Cometh, it's at Radio 99.3 FM. Here's your song. We'll be back after that.
Hello everyone, sorry to interrupt, but it is your friendly neighbourhood Leon here. I just wanted to take a few seconds to remind our old listeners and to all our new that you can support the Dice Men Cometh on Patreon. You can jump over to thedicemencometh.com and there is a link sitting there on the front page. You can give as little or as much as you want every month and we are very, very appreciative. I myself do it for several different podcasts and a dollar or two comes out and I don't even notice. And I can tell you right now that if everyone listening to my voice right now only gave us a dollar every month, we would be very, very happy, lads. And every cent that you spend goes straight back into the show. We've been using it, as well as the advertising from our lovely sponsors, to go all around Australia to see you guys at every convention we can get our hands on, and hopefully we might even be doing it internationally soon, so watch this space. Also, you could jump over to redbubble.com and search for Dice Men, and you can get our logo onto all different kind of merchandise. We ourselves have them on t-shirts and hoodies and coffee cups and stuff, and they're really cool, and that's another way you can support us as well. The show has grown leaps and bounds in the last year or so, and it is thanks to the effort and support of you lovely people out there. You keep giving and keep giving us material, and we will keep doing the show. So, love to all of you, and now back to the action.
That was Ben Harper on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Mama's Got a Girlfriend Now, and you're here with the Dice Men Cometh. We're coughing, we're spluttering, we're struggling through. I'm old. I forget things. I'm sorry.
Good. You should be.
Leon.
Yes.
Young but sick.
Yes.
That
is me all over for this last couple of weeks. I've had a good time spending at home doing absolutely bugger all. Played lots of video games, which is good. I told my wife yesterday, I'm just going to finish up. I'm on the last mission of The Witcher 3. This is at 4 o'clock.
The last mission? You mean you're finishing The Witcher 3?
Yes. When I said last mission, of the final expansion. So this was the last mission. I said to her at 4 o'clock, sweetheart, I'll be there soon, just on the last mission. Yep, play until 4 in the morning. So anyway, I just wanted to quickly talk about, and in the coming weeks, well, I won't be here for the next few weeks, sadly, because of my work schedule. But when I get back, I do want to talk about, we've played recently some games that some have been around for 20 years, some have been around 30 years, and some of them are still really, really good. Mm. And they hold up to this day, and why other people haven't stolen their mechanics is beyond me. So I won't mention what they are yet, so we can talk about them later. But a game that has kind of been a staple of the Dice Men, especially in the earlier years, I wanted to talk about, because we hadn't played it in quite some time, and that was Seven Wonders. Mm. So we got this to the table the other night. We had five, which is a pretty good number for Seven Wonders. I would say probably the minimum, but that's just me.
But is the maximum 5.5?
No, I think it plays up to... What's the base game play up to? Seven?
Base game plays 6. It plays 7 if you add the expansion.
Which I think everybody does. So we played with the Cities expansion and the Leaders expansion, which for most people that still own Seven Wonders and still like it, they're pretty much musts from what I've been told. Again, I've only played this several times myself because, funnily enough, every time I play Seven Wonders, which is about 4 times in the hobby so far, it's every 2 years or so, and the game always consists of me going through the entire game and right at the very end going, okay, now I can see all these symbols and find out what everything's going on. Oh, the game's over. Oh, I'll see you again in 2 years. Because we had fun playing this game in the sense that we were just laughing the entire time at how much we were passing the rule book back and forth. And we had
the rule book. The rule books.
Yes, because there was a rule book for the expansions, and there were tiny ones for like the little city.
Yeah, some little promo ones.
Oh,
going on.
So every round it was, you take this book, I'll take that book, and because they're just cards with symbols on them. But for some reason, we'd been a while since we played it, we just couldn't wrap our head around a lot of them. And because of these cities and leaders as well, all of them do unique things, and just all that different stuff added together, it made for an interesting experience.
Yeah, it did. So this game should theoretically, in its base format, take about half an hour, maybe 40 minutes. We played for a couple of hours.
Yeah.
We did have, as you say, heaps of back and forth because as the expansions were released and as some promos came out, the symbology and the iconography got a little bit more...
Yeah, because it was
just intuitive.
Quite simple.
Yeah.
Or at least intuitive from the start in that it was the same sort of symbols repeated again. There were always 2 or 3 maybe on the Wonder Boards that were... You didn't really remember them. You had to look them up. But mostly everything else was pretty simple. So some of these promo ones, were they a bit
just
crazy?
Just a little bit more involved, I guess. And clearly, having not played it for a while, you just forget it a bit. So my overall impression of it is still a great game, but I don't need the Leaders and the Cities expansion because, for me, it just makes it longer.
Yeah,
I would rather just play the base game, get it over and done with in that half an hour, and my lasting impression is I'd just rather play Seven Wonders Duel.
Yeah, see, I've got to disagree with you there. I have played Seven Wonders Duel a couple of times.
I know.
It does have tiny cards, which just don't give you the experience of passing these great big cards. And for my money, I'd rather just play the base game of Seven Wonders. I do agree you do want to have probably 5 or 6, I may have been wrong. It might play 7 out of the box. I'm not 100% sure. And it might have gone to 8 when you added the extra expansions. But, yeah, you part of the beauty of this game is how quickly that it plays.
Yes.
Well, theoretically, that is the beauty, yeah. But the thing is with this especially is that all these games, and like I said, well, I won't mention these other ones, but they're games that they're considered classics. So you put it to the table, you can explain the rules really quickly, and the game flows really well. And you go, oh, I can see why this is a classic, or oh, I can see why this inspired so many other games. Seven Wonders is a big, big deal, and has inspired lots and lots of other games. But if you'd put this in front of me right now and said this is a brand new game, I wouldn't be too high on it because it was just, from a mechanical sense, it didn't play that good. It was a laugh because of the ridiculousness of us having to hand rule books back and forth all the time, but it didn't flow that well. And it's a game that is supposed to be considered like a classic in our hobby. And I don't know if anything's replaced it, but after playing this, I had no desire to play it again.
I'd much rather play Sushi Go Party.
Well, I was going to say, I don't know that there's many games that, well, particularly Seven, you can play with Seven, or even Six. Once you get up to that number, you're really looking at party games.
Yeah.
And this is definitely not a party game.
No, which, you know, and it's supposed to be quick, which it just wasn't. But there are other things, like there's the Babel expansion as well, which is supposed to be good, and there's lots of other little expansions. There could be groups that this is their kind of go-to game that they always play, that they know the symbols back and forth, so they're fine. But for something that's supposed to be a classic, it just was too fiddly for what it should have been.
Okay, well, speaking of Babel, we have clearly babbled on for way too long again because we're out of time. What a surprise. Garth, you and I will be back next week.
That's right.
Leon will be working.
Well, unless I'm sick again.
Or slowly dying again.
Yeah, I'll still be.
But look, thank you so much for listening, everyone. We have been the Dice Men Cometh. You have been awesome to take the time to listen to us. And Area 52 has been fantastic for supporting us the way they do. Thank you so much. Get in there. Tell them that Dice Men sent you. Spend all your monies on the things. And
indeed.
Have a great week till next week.
Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
You've been listening to another episode of The Dice Men Cometh. Thanks to Area 52, Hobart's best ventilated game store, and more. Find out more on area52.com.au. They support The Dice Men, and you can too, at Patreon, for as little as just $1 per month. It's not a lot to ask for podcasting gold.